Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
And good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, July 28th. We are practically at the middle of summer, and the weather out there seems to be agreeing with us. We have a good show for you today. My name is Magnus Teevil. Joining me in the studio today is
Peter R.H.
And Peter will be up at the end of the show with a special conversation. We have a few stories to get us started, though, today. New transit funding for Westminster to make improvements around cycling, walking, and transit amenities. It's also Pride season, and it's the beginning of, at least in Vancouver, most of the rest of the world, Pride season is in June, but here in Vancouver, we do it at the end of July and the beginning of August. So it is Pride Week, and already around town, Pride-related events are kicking off with, of course, the big focus this coming weekend. There'll be Pride events and parties and performances and whatnot all around town throughout this coming weekend, of course, culminating with the big Pride Parade, which is returning to its traditional route through the West End. But we have a story about Burnaby's Pride Flag Raising event that took place last week. Also, a story about the killing of a much-loved grizzly bear on Texada Island, which has left the community devastated. What are you going to be talking about today, Peter?
I have a pre-recorded interview, dialogue with Adam,
yeah,
about South Africa, about the apartheid debt, because I spoke a bit about it last week, because it sort of ended on the extended conversations we had with Stephen Fan and Adam. And then I decided that he came in the studio Thursday to have a pre-recorded segment. That's about 8 minutes, and I'll say a few things after it.
Excellent. And, of course, we have a new episode of Gardening in Bark. Even though it's the middle of summer, we're already thinking about and taking action on our winter crops and what we are going to be what's going in the ground now that'll come up next winter and provide fresh greens through the cold months. Let's get things started, though. We're going to start this off with the story on Burnaby Pride, and hope you enjoy.
This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On July 21st, local 2S LGBTQIA+ advocacy group Burnaby Pride, along with the City of Burnaby, held an event outside of Burnaby City Hall where the Intersex Progress Pride flag was raised next to the British Columbia and Canada flags. The flag raising marks a week of celebration taking place 1 week before Burnaby's annual Pride Festival on July 26th. First to speak at the event was Burnaby City Councilor Daniel Tatro, who emphasized the city's support of Burnaby's queer community, as well as its stance against anti-2S LGBTQIA+ discrimination.
And also, just by being here today, you're showing your support. You're doing your part. And also, we here to remember that Pride is also joyous and a vibrant celebration. And a reminder that we must continue to push back against bigotry, hatred, and discrimination. And again, not just today, but every day. In our community, our differences don't divide us. They are what make us special. And I'm honored to be here, I'm honored to show my support, and I'm thrilled to see you here as well.
This sentiment was echoed by other speakers at the event, including Azo Rojbi, a coordinator for Burnaby Pride.
One of the important things we have to continue talking about is Pride started as a protest.
and it is continues to be a protest. We don't have to look very far to see our rights being challenged and taken away from us, whether there is in provinces nearby here in Canada or across the border in the United States or around the world. So we have to continue, as the speaker before me, the counselor said, fighting against bigotry, challenging bigotry. And it's important for people that live in Burnaby to see that reflected in their elected officials and here at City Hall.
Lastly, Vishad Deeplaw, the Senior Manager for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion for the City of Burnaby, spoke on his personal experiences and how that led him to the City of Burnaby.
I've always looked to try and find that sense of belonging and where I felt I genuinely should be. Through my teens, growing up in South Africa, I was the obese kid, I was the kid of color, I was also the gay kid. And for the time that I grew up, it was not the best place to be. It has its challenges. Then when I wanted to marry my husband 22 years ago, we were told we could not get married because it was not legal. We then struggled to have a son, which we had to wait as well for laws to change for us to actually become parents. When we became parents, we had to fight with the idea of, firstly, not getting parental leave because there's no maternal figure. At the same time, we had to fight for the fact that some schools didn't want our son in their schooling system. Later on, we immigrated for a better life for my son, which is 8 years ago. And if anybody else here are immigrants, you know, you're then also trying to fit in once again. You're trying to find your footing. You're trying to see where you belong. But I want to share that in 2022, I joined the City of Burnaby. Today, I can share that I have found my sense of belonging. From our mayor, council, our city leadership, colleagues, from across all departments, who I can also call friends, I feel seen.
At the end of the event, the Intersex Progress Pride flag was raised. Beginning this year's celebration of Pride in the City of Burnaby. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby.
And this
segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
And this is, of course, the beginning of Pride Week. I guess some people would have said this weekend was the beginning of Pride Week. Lots of stuff going on. The biggest event of all, of course, is the Pride Parade happening on Sunday, August 3rd. And this has been a challenging year for the Vancouver Pride Group. Like Pride organizations throughout North America, they have seen a huge drop in funding as many corporate donors have backed away from supporting LGBTQ plus events, along with other sort of initiatives, largely in response to sort of the headwinds created by the Trump administration's attack on DEI. So that's one thing they're facing, and the parade this year. Is changing its orientation. Last year, it ended up near... that was actually a funny joke that I didn't intend changing its orientation. Anyway. Ended up near Science World. This year, they're turning that around and starting near that location and then heading down along Expo and Pacific... Expo Boulevard and Pacific Avenue... back towards the West End, ending at Burrard Street, where it will spill out onto the festival sort of village along Sunset Beach and the shore along there. All that's happening on Sunday. And, of course, there are lots of other Pride-related events happening all throughout the week, and especially this coming weekend. You can find more information about all those events online. There's pretty much something for everyone, from family-oriented events to everything else. Next up, we have Another report from our reporter, Danny Nesvadarani, looking at a big grant of funds for New Westminster to improve transit options for pedestrians, cycling, and transit. And here is here's Danny's report.
This is Danny Nesvadarani
with Dead Air. I was here in the...
On July 17th, the city of New Westminster received $3.96 million in funding from Metro Vancouver's transportation agency, TransLink, to fund transportation improvement projects throughout the city. According to the city's communications team, the improvements that this funding will go towards are aligned with New Westminster's master transportation plan, as well as several of the city's goals regarding climate action. This includes increasing the number of trips taken through sustainable modes of transportation and reallocating road space to sustainable transportation and public spaces. To learn more about the specifics of what this transportation funding will be going towards, CJSF reached out to Mike Anderson, the manager of transportation for New Westminster. During our conversation, Anderson listed the various streams of funding that will be contributing to the city's transportation infrastructure, starting with buses.
It's a combination, really. So, as I mentioned before, TransLink has different streams of funding. So there is a program for bus speed and reliability infrastructure. So any improvements we make that can help buses get through the city more reliably and in some cases faster. So we've completed a study a few years ago about transit in the city and where buses in particular get caught up in congestion. And so we look at ways that we can reduce delay for transit.
Anderson then went on to detail another area that this funding will be going towards: research on how to alleviate bus delays in certain busier areas of New Westminster.
We're also working on studies at both ends of the Queensborough Bridge. And although the Queensborough Bridge is provincial infrastructure and jurisdiction, we are working with TransLink and the Ministry of Transportation to see what we can do to improve bus movements on and off the bridges, because especially getting on the bridge, buses experience a lot of delays. So the TransLink funding is helping that, so fund those studies.
Next, he touched on funding towards walking and cycling infrastructure.
Another stream of funding is for walking infrastructure, especially where we can improve walking infrastructure to transit. And so TransLink funds projects that improve walking infrastructure that connects in particular to the more frequent transit network. And then the other stream of funding is for cycling projects. And so we have an active transportation network plan to build out 26 cycling routes across the city quite ambitiously in the next 5 years. And so TransLink funds cycling network improvements as well. So
by the end of our conversation, it became clear that this funding would be going towards improvements for public transit, cycling infrastructure, and overall walkability in New Westminster. We asked Anderson if there were any concerns from those that rely on personal vehicles that still needed to be considered in the city's transportation plan. This was his response.
That's a good question. New Westminster's transportation policy definitely prioritizes walking, cycling, and transit. It's clearly outlined in our transportation plan as our priority modes of transportation, recognizing that still about somewhat over 50% of people in New Westminster use a car to get around. So we tend not to do things that, a lot of things that reduce capacity for cars. We are focused on making improvements for those people on foot and bike, particularly safety improvements, as you noted. We can't build our way out of traffic congestion, unfortunately. Nobody's been able to do that. And so while we can make things somewhat more efficient, the reality is that we can't accommodate more cars on our roads than are really already there today without significant impacts and significant costs. The cost to, for example, widen a road is extremely high and beyond the capacity of a lot of municipalities to afford anymore. So we really do have to focus our investments in transit and walking and cycling. So we're not trying to make it, not necessarily trying to make it more difficult to get around by car. We're doing, you know, making changes to make it easier to get around on foot, bike, and transit. We absolutely know that some people continue to get around by car and will always do that. That's their choice. At this point, we're sort of beyond the point where we can, afford to try to build our way out of congestion. It's just not feasible.
Once again, that was our interview with Mike Anderson, the manager of transportation for the city of New Westminster, where he discussed where the city's recently received $3.96 million from TransLink would be going towards in order to improve transportation infrastructure within New Westminster. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Thanks to Danny for that report. Now it's time for Bird Note. And I will point out that these birds are not from our local area, Peter.
Yes, I've noticed that over the 2-year period.
They are about breeding birds of the northern Great Plains, though, so I hope you...
Northern United States. In the northern Great Plains.
Yeah, which I guess would just be the prairies here in Canada.
Oh, I mean... are they on the prairies, these birds?
I think they are.
Okay. But they're not in Burnaby, though.
No, not in Burnaby.
This is Bird Note. Why do so many species of birds choose the northern Great Plains to raise their young? Like the lark bunting, Sprague's pipit, the chestnut-collared longspur, or Baird's sparrow. After months of frigid cold and snow, warm spring days spur vigorous plant growth across the prairies of Montana, the Dakotas, and southern Canada. These grassland habitats are flush with insects that birds capture easily from the fresh grasses and wildflowers. The open plains are ideal breeding areas for grouse and shorebirds whose active offspring must forage for themselves while their parents guard them, like these upland sandpipers. Migratory birds connect the northern Great Plains with many parts of the Western Hemisphere. Sprague's pipit and chestnut-collared longspurs, for example, winter in central Mexico. And those upland sandpipers fly thousands of miles to the pampas of Argentina and Uruguay. Disrupting any part of a bird's annual life cycle, at their breeding habitats, migration stopover sites, or wintering grounds, reduces the survival of the species. We can help these migratory marvels thrive by conserving the rich grasslands they depend on to survive. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
This is a tune called Postal Code.
Tattoos. Ever since I moved closer to the mountainside, I finally see the rain and the stars are clear in the sky. This little town is slowly shrinking down to half the size. Maybe it's you, maybe it's me, maybe the truth just isn't that deep. You asked me to stay, I lied through my teeth. The falter rock bottom isn't that steep. I can't stop running.
Vancouver's very own Hallelujah Halu from her EP Eternally Yours, and that was Postal Code in a live performance. She's pretty busy performing around town, so if you keep your eye open, you can catch her. And it's definitely a worthwhile show to catch. Here we have some Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. Decades ago, public service announcements asked parents, "It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?" But a recent campaign to fight online misinformation about climate change turned that script on its head by asking young people, "It's 10 p.m. Do you know what your parents are scrolling?"
A lot of the reasons why we try to instill comedy and humor into our videos is because people are more likely to engage and more likely to learn and laugh at the same time.
Javi Garcia is with the Gas Leaks Project, which teaches people about the harms of fossil fuels. The group partnered with the nonprofit Green Latinos to produce videos and social media posts in English and Spanish, encouraging people to help their parents recognize false and misleading content. He says Latinos are particularly exposed to climate misinformation, in part because they often get their news from social media, where false claims are rampant. Yet at the same time, many live in areas with a high risk of climate disasters.
I'm from Puerto Rico, and we see the effects of climate change happening firsthand. You know, beaches that are being swallowed by the water, more intense hurricanes.
So he says it's especially important to counter climate misinformation in Latino communities. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
And now a story from our friends at CHLY in Nanaimo. A bit of a story about a bear on Texada Island that had made itself a bit of a fixture with the residents there. And let's give this a listen.
This is a CHLY and CVOX news update.
This is a community that hasn't had any predators for many, many, many years. And it's a community completely unprepared for a predator as such as a grizzly bear, with all the attractants everywhere.
On July 15th at 11:42 a.m., the Conservation Officer Service, or COS, posted to social media that the grizzly bear who had taken up residence on Texada Island was found shot dead. The results of the necropsy have yet to be shared, and the identity of the shooter has not been made public. The bear, nicknamed Tex by local resident and advocate Katrin Glenn Bittner, had been on the island since late May.
On May 25th, Tex has swum over from Powell River to Texada Island, and I knew instantly. At first, I was excited, and then I was like, in the same second, I knew this was not going to be good due to the community.
Glenn Bittner says that the lack of awareness on the island meant many attractants, things that would draw the bear, were left out. Anything from bird feeders to unsecured garbage to unlocked vehicles. She says that even livestock on the island is not protected the way it is in areas that regularly cohabitate with predators like grizzly bears.
I basically started being a voice for Tex when, as soon as I heard there is a kill order on him, I've become his voice. On June 1st, I have opened up a Facebook page called Save Tex, the Texada Island Grizzly Bear, and I spoke about myself. I spoke about the community. I have tried to educate the people about bears. I have tried to educate people about around their property. There was just zero awareness on Texada Island of coexistence with a grizzly bear.
Glenn Bittner says that bears hold a special place in her family. Her brother, Dr. David Bittner, is a biologist, bear researcher, photographer, and speaker. Glenn Bittner spent several weeks with her brother in Alaska observing a dense population of brown bears. She says she also learned to coexist with bears while working with livestock on farms and ranches in BC.
I've really got to see bears, their behavior, everything, the way they're misunderstood, the way they're, everything gets misinterpreted. And they are so forgiven. They are so, they're most amazing teachers. And we can learn so much from them if we just want to.
Glenn Bittner shares what the reaction was when the community learned of the death.
When we found out of the death of Tex, the community is absolutely devastated. It broke many, many people's hearts. And this was inevitable, 100%. This was absolutely, this should have never come to this. And the ministry has failed us and have failed Tex the most.
Glenn Bittner details how she learned of what happened to Tex earlier this week, first with a tip from a friend that the bear had been injured on Monday.
On Monday, I received a phone call from a friend of mine that was out in an area on Texada Island, and she has been stopped by the RCMP to make her aware that there is a wounded grizzly bear, and the wound was caused by a gunshot, and they didn't know where he was. And to make her aware, she phoned me. I phoned the RCMP right away. And they have made a statement with me, and they confirmed with me that the bear has been shot at. He is being wounded. They couldn't confirm the seriousness of the wound, and we made it public on social media. And several hours, or maybe 4 or 5 hours after that, a confession has been made by the shooter that has destroyed Tex on Sunday evening with 6 gunshots that tried to hide the body for 24 hours. And that it got confessed, and he needs to be held accountable now. This was totally legal. This was, Tex has always been a respectful bear, very respectful bear. For the people that were afraid of Tex, just his presence feared them. So most people that have seen Tex on Texada Island misinterpreted the encounters with him and did not get to see the true, beautiful, gentle bear he was.
Glenn Bittner explains that she is confident in calling Tex a gentle bear as she feels none of the encounters could be described as aggressive, or they would have ended completely differently. There was only one report of a livestock encounter which the Conservation Officer Service investigated and released the following statement. Quote, on June 10 and 11, 2025, on Taxeda Island, conservation officers responded to a complaint of a grizzly bear chasing livestock. The COS investigation determined no livestock were attacked and conflict prevented.